Thursday, 16th of April, and welcome to Solbu and Peter Lewis and Ron Morissette, and I see Marshman there, and I see our illustrious leader, Robbie.
Illustrious.
Illustrious leader. So, Robbie.
More like luminous. Yours,
well, hey, you guys hear the news?
Lighting this time.
GitHub.
Yeah, Microsoft I got an email from them.
I wanted to bring it up because, and I was going to mention it yesterday, but we ran out of time. But we had a discussion, I think, last week or maybe the week before. I don't know, because can you believe 27 coffee breaks so far? But at Microsoft, we had the discussion that I was saying, like, Microsoft is actually doing some good for GitHub, and they've made it so that it's free for teams. So now I can create private repositories with unlimited amount of team members on that repository for free.
Cool.
Yay.
Very good.
Cool. Very nice.
Yeah.
And that's all because someone in the Microsoft team was watching our episode. I got an idea.
Sorry about all those things I said about you, Microsoft.
we take back everything we said about you, promise.
No,
I
didn't say I take it back. I just apologized.
Fair enough. Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
I apologize for my brutal honesty.
Yeah. They do leave when buy my book. No wolves.
I just thought that was great, so I had to start off our coffee break with a little bit of praise to Microsoft, which you don't get often from Robbie.
You're right. You're right. I'm gobsmacked. I'm flabbergasted. I can't believe it.
You run your own GitHub repository, though, or your own Git server.
I do.
VP9, you were saying.
It's not hard to do. I run Linux throughout the house. I don't run Windows at the house.
So that's just for your own code base. Like, I think
that's correct.
What's different about me is that because I run NEMS Linux, for example, other people need to be able to access it. So it's not just for me.
And if I want to make it public, I would use GitHub or GitLab. You know, either one. It doesn't matter. There are plenty of places where they'll host Git repositories. Sure. But once you put it out there, you've lost control of it, right? So you just don't
Not losing control so much as, did we lose BP9? So I'm still moving?
Yep.
All right. It's BP9's connection that's dropping out today.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know that you lose control. You just lose godlike power over your repository because anyone can fork it, right? That's all. But presuming that it's open source. Although I don't know what the regulations are on a private GitHub repository. Like, I use private GitHub repositories not for proprietary software, but for stuff that I don't want in the public, like people forking and using, and, you know, more like my own stuff that I'm developing for internal use. I think we've lost BP9.
Running your own Git public repository. It still gives you godlike power because, you know, God giveth and God taketh away.
Well, that conversation really died.
Right?
I heard back from... Go ahead, Peter.
I said that's the Social Security in England. The Lord giveth and Social Security taketh away. They're the people who run your benefit. That's been a bit cynical, but that's what they like. They think they're God sometimes.
Yeah. All right. So the perfect segue is, since we're already on the topic of he gives and he takes away, I found out that we could do construction and heard back from the contractor and said, oh, sorry, that's great news, but I'm completely booked until May. So construction cannot continue, even though the government says... I can. I could find another contractor who's available, but truth is, this guy comes highly recommended. I think he's got good vision for what we're doing, and so I think sticking with him is the way to go. Just means more delays. Welcome back, BP9.
Yeah.
You're having connectivity connectivity woes today, eh?
Well, what happens, there's something weird about my AT, probably shouldn't have said that, my U-verse connection, that if somebody rings, if somebody calls and leaves me a message, almost guaranteed that will kick me off the internet. And it may have happened, I don't know. I did not hear the phone ring. I've got noise cancelling headset on, so if the phone rings, I can't hear.
You got a filter in your phone line as well. Well,
yeah, I was going to say, do you remember the days of ADSL?
That's what I had all that before I had U-verse. But I had
the internet. I need to make a phone call.
Until last year, I had ADSL until I moved into this house.
But it may well be.
I remember it as if it was last year.
Yeah. I remember dial-up, and I'd get on the line, and we have call waiting, but you were able to enter a code to turn it off.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then a friend
star 6-7 comma comma.
Yeah, a friend of ours called and said, I got a busy signal. I'm not supposed to get a busy signal. I said, you get a busy, it's my phone. You get a busy signal when I say you get a busy signal.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
I remember when I had my first internet connection. It was a modem connection, 33K. And after a few months, people started to complain that it was they no longer could just call me on the phone because it was always occupied all day.
No wonder. It's only 33K.
Yeah, and only one line. And when the phone line was occupied for the internet, the phone was occupied. It was already in use. And next year, I upgraded to ISDN. And then I could be on the internet and get a phone line. And the ESDN line I had until I moved here.
It strikes me as slightly ironic that now if my internet goes down, my phone doesn't work.
Yeah.
In
the UK, they give you a box with a filter in. One's a low-pass filter that got the audio over the phone, and the other one's a high-pass filter that cuts off above 1 meg. That uses the internet, and they shouldn't intermix between each other. It's just a couple filters in there, LC filters.
Yeah, they call them Z filters here for ADSL lines. Yeah, or you can get a pot splitter. You can install a pot splitter, but that's so. Who uses ADSL anymore? I would go nuts if I had to. Do you?
I used it until last year.
They still use it on their broadband.
It's so brutal.
Yeah.
Like you're talking 800K upstream. That's brutal.
And I had 16 megabit down.
16?
So.
You must have had a double bonded network connection or something.
Yeah, but I had as far as 16. I paid for 20 megabit down. But they the cable stretch to the central, and the central was just across the street, but it ran through all the other apartment complex, and the line stretch was almost 3 kilometers, and that is around here. It is the it's the cutoff point for how far you can be and have ADSL, and any longer line than that, you have start to modem.
We still have to have them because if we don't have them, they get upset. The BT gets upset about that sort of thing. So you have to have them in line. They're brutal, like you say. But it keeps everybody happy. So everybody can use a phone and I can use the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
And the first thing I did after moving here was I knew that two weeks before I moved here... I am a packager of Mageia Linux, and on July 1st, version 7 came out last year, and I always use Rsync to download the binary and the source tree of RPMs, and I knew that was about maybe 200 gigs that was about to come down. And I was waiting to download until I got here because When Magyar 6 came out, it was about the same size. The download was at full speed for almost 3 days, and this time it took only 6 hours. So
take me 5 minutes in the studio. Yeah.
So I started and even then I had a limit of
I've earned bragging rights. Come on.
So I had 70 megabits of download speed that I have configured the script to use. And it's still only used 6 hours. So I started it, and then I went to bed. And when I woke up, it was finished.
you're all very lucky, because we're still in the Stone Age over here. We're still in the Stone Age, you know. It took me 6 years to get from dial-up to broadband. I keep asking every time, but they just wouldn't do it. They just don't play bloody ball. And then finally, I got some outside influence from the government, and they changed their mind. But it's very difficult. We never had internet for quite recent this village, and it is very slow, as I explained, you know. It is very, very slow. It is full sometimes. The phone's rotten, the internet's rotten. And he's not bloody winning. It's a game of phones in his village. Are you in the Gow dialing zone on the mobile network or not? Because you know why, don't you? They put the air up and it's not very far away. It's about 20 yards away, 100 yards away, and the air is facing the wrong way out of the village. It's on the backside of the aerial.
Yeah, that reminds me of a friend of mine. It is still the same one with the big red array. When he was in high school, he lived at here. He rented an apartment in his local town. And he lived in the only house in the entire town. It was in the middle of the town, but it was the only house who could not get a broadband connection. So he was stuck with modem.
That's like Studio D after you move in.
Yeah,
realizing there's no internet.
And I remember me and two friends, we were driving. It took 10 hours to drive to where I lived. He was going to stay a week at my house. And so we came, three big guys in a Saab 9000. And me and one of the friends stayed outside, and one of my friends helped him to carry his baggage, including his desktop computer and screens. And the neighbor upstairs thought it was the police who came and arrested him for piracy.
Oh, no. Oh,
we still laugh about that.
He was 2-3 miles away a few years ago. They were still having dial-up. That was the one with the nurse. They still have it dialed up two or three years ago around there on the coast. And down in the lakes, down in Vermont, they definitely did quite recently as well. Because my colleague goes on that direction, and he tried to give me tried to pass some information on his laptop, and it was almost impossible because he couldn't find a proper internet connection. All he could bloody find was dial up. It was out in Vermont, but that's down on the border, down south. On the coast, which is about 5 miles away. About a few years ago, they didn't have blast. They had a dial-up. So how primitive we are over here.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be possible to, especially for a programmer or you know, somebody who's at least somewhat internet savvy, I don't think a dial-up would work at all anymore. Or even the old ADSL, it's just too slow.
Unless you have access to a Unix-based system that you can remote into.
I thought you were going to say a bottle of scotch.
Yeah, about all it would work for me. Yeah.
Unless you have access to a bottle of scotch, in which case.
No cards there, right, Robbie?
Yeah.
No cards, you know what? There.
Peter, with all the backlight today, is really giving me a throwback to 1980s crime drama. And he's the witness.
Bushmills. I get Bushmills whiskey. It's the oldest in the world.
Right. Oh, I hooked up, or I didn't hook up. I got out the 1U server chassis that arrived yesterday, last night at the studio, and kind of placed single board computers within this 1U chassis to see how I would wire it in and how many I could fit. And big assortment of stuff, everything from an Odroid N2 to a Raspberry Pi 4 to a couple of Odroids, an XU4. There's a couple Banana Pis in there, Orange Pis. So I was able to actually fit 9 single board computers within that 1U chassis with enough room left over for the fuse box and the power transformers as well.
That was a mean joke.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be pretty neat.
Look at the.
I see Ron's background there. Look at that.
Oh. Say something, Ron, so it switches
13,
to you.
13 pies.
Nice.
That's a 2U unit. That's not mine, though.
Oh, my goodness, dude. I have looked for something like that. That's rack mounted.
Makerverse?
Wow. So you have to have a 3D printer, but that's
right, brilliant. Or have somebody else print it.
Yeah. That's perfect. Oh, man.
I was looking at that the other day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought you had that, Ron.
No, I don't have it.
I thought it was behind you in the room.
No, it's not big.
Yeah, it's a 19-foot rack.
I could tell it was a picture. I just thought it was.
I thought it was a 19-inch rack. It looked like a 19-inch rack from here.
Yeah, that's what I'd love that to stick that in my rack at the studio. Yeah. Although I do like that I'm able to intermix. Yeah. Because Raspberry Pi, to me, like having used so many different single board computers, Raspberry Pi is like the least, I guess, as far as like reliability goes. So I'd rather have like an XU4. So if I could have something like that with some XU4s in it, that would be amazing.
Well, given how you and Bo have talked about how Raspberry Pis can corrupt the SD card when the power drops suddenly. Mm-hmm. Or it was you and Marshman. I forget who. I think it was Marshman who said it because he's got all kinds of different single board computers.
Yeah.
I may have to go get me like an Odroid or two or something like that to.
I'd start with an Odroid XU4. I think Odroid XU4 is the real like one to one, like comparable to maybe a Pi 3B plus, but a little bit more power than that. Plus, it's got two gigs of RAM. So, but it has an eMMC port on it. So,
you can
plug an eMMC instead of using the SD card, which is exactly why it's more reliable. Although the power thing with the Raspberry Pi it seems to be a real issue. I have had way too many cards get damaged.
Yeah, I did not realize that it was an issue specific to the Raspberry Pi. I thought it was an SBC issue. Globally,
I've never had it happen with any other SBC.
Wow. Okay.
Pretty much any Raspberry. You can replicate it with a Raspberry Pi just by giving it dirty power for a day.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to look at the Odroid for sure. I like it a lot.
What do you think, Bill? XU4 is probably a good drop-in, like one-to-one comparable, but I think the N2. If I was looking to actually build like a pretty nice little system, the N2 or maybe the HC1 would be the way to go. So the HC1 being the one that has you could plug an SSD into it.
Right. I should test the Raspberry Pi like I tested the one XU4 I had, like putting a 12-volt power supply on.
Let's just see.
I'll be happy to get a more powerful SBC. I have no problem with that. I'm not using SBCs day in, day out. I still use my desktop machine day in, day out because I'm still, ripping DVDs and stuff like that. So I don't think an SBC can do that. I think it has to be a desktop to be able to.
Well, you can install a desktop OS on like an XU4 or something like that.
Oh, sure, yeah, but don't expect to get the same sort of power you'd get out of a
transcode speed is CPU intensive. Yeah,
right, right, right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm using the H2 almost exclusively now. Mm-hmm. I'm on it right now. So
that's like your desktop computer.
I have a Windows machine for the proprietary software that I have to run for certain things, but I rarely turn on my other Windows 10 machine at this point.
One of the things I do want to do, Robbie, I have an MP4, something like that. And what I want to do, I've been meaning to Google it, and I should just Google it. Or
are you talking about a NanoPi?
No, I'm talking about a process that I'm looking to do, and in fact, you would know better than I would. I have an MP4, so it's a video file, right?
Oh, okay.
I want to split the first few minutes out of that MP4. I'm sure there are tools on Linux that will just do that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, FFmpeg in the command line. You can
specify how many
seconds you want.
I already used that to transcode from one resolution to another.
Right.
Some of the videos I have are like 4K, and they have to be transcoded on the fly to my 1K resolution.
There is two ways that you can do that. One way is that you can cut out a few minutes and just take that. Most used method is to encode the few minutes that you need. That is the easiest way to find the guides on how to do. But to just simply take the first few minutes and not re-encode it afterwards, I know you can do that, but the guides on how to do that is hard to find.
It's already at the resolution and everything that I want. I just want to cut those first few minutes out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I'll do. All right, good. Well, as I say, I already use FFmpeg. I'll get it right one day.
Yeah.
I'm having a slow start. Stop it.
I love that your internet kind of went a little bit slow there as you said it.
Yeah.
Did it really?
It did.
I'm not surprised.
It went slow just when you said going slow.
That's so sad. Yeah. That is very sad.
That's so funny.
All right. All right. So, okay, good. Thank you for that, Rob. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Yep.
So, maybe something to Google.
That was an easy fix.
Yeah. I use it for tons of stuff. I use FFmpeg to transcode from H.265 to H.264 because I don't have a 265 chip. Decoder chip on my Plex server, so it can stutter, so it doesn't work as well. But also, if I get some files by perfectly legitimate means that happen to be Russian as the first language, like an MKV file or something that is like multilingual, rather than having to go in and change the language every time I click on a file, I rather just re-encode it with the proper language.
Okay.
You don't have to re-encode. You can.
Not re-encode. Just recreate the file using FFmpeg. I don't. Yeah, you're right. Don't re-encode because then you're actually having to wait for it to re. But that's FFmpeg has the -v colon copy, so that will just copy the video. But yeah, you're right. Oh, boy. Wow. I think we are almost out of time. It's hard to know because I started a little bit late today. I wasn't sure if I was going to get held up in a meeting, but I ended up being able to come up to the lunchroom. So.
It's 11:26. Yeah. So I did some more, just some real quick jiggery-pokery with the Pine Time. I looked up the display documentation to try and understand how the XY coordinates are described, and it looks like the 00 coordinate or pixel is in the top left hand corner. Well, that's top left hand corner for me, but
that's what I was seeing for you too, right? Yeah.
And then X works normally, right? That is that it runs across to the right, but it looks like Y increases as you go down, as you translate downwards, and that's different to how normal XY graphs work, right? Normal XY graphs, Y goes up as you increase.
Oh, okay.
You know, it translates upward. So I've got to figure out, I probably just need to literally, first I need to turn the clock face 90 degrees.
Yep.
To get the 12 o'clock here to 12 o'clock there, and then translate the whole thing downwards by whatever number of pixels it is. And I'm still reading the documentation. I still can't figure out if it's 240 by 240 or 320 by 320. I have a horrible suspicion.
No, soon enough, my friend.
Well, I hope so.
I'm just waiting for that shipping notification.
I know, me too. But I have a suspicion it might be 240 across and 320 down.
No. Nah.
Which is going to make...
But it's a square.
I'm still trying to figure it out. I think there's a non-display area top and bottom of the vertical part, so I think it might be cropped to 240 by 240.
Change the coordinates. If you do 240 minus Y, that will put it on the bottom.
I know how to do, as I say, I've done that many times before. It was just a question of understanding one, you know, what the actual coordinate system looks like on the Pine Time versus on my graphical window. Because in the end, it doesn't matter what it looks like on my screen. On my computer screen, regardless of whatever graphical UI desktop I use, what matters is how it's supposed to be laid out on the Pinetime display on the ST.
Oh, I can't wait to get it. And I'm gonna run your firmware on my watch for the first week.
Well, when it exists, it doesn't exist. There's nothing there but MD files right now. There's just a markdown file.
There's no watch yet.
Yes, exactly.
It's coming. It'll be here soon enough. Don't worry.
Just give it some more time.
That's it.
We're on Pine Time here, Bill.
I need more time, Captain.
If we're on Pine Time, that means it's going to be about 3 months later than we're expecting.
You never know when Amazon will ship it, though, right? I mean, it might arrive tomorrow for all you. You're as confused as I am as about what's considered a... essential. So,
I wonder if this day is coming up in June. It's been going for since March. I ordered it at 0.110 watts with the broadcast flight project, and it's ordered in March for my birthday, and I'm still waiting to June. Anyway, they come June, beginning the end of May, beginning of June, which is ouch, because it's a long way.
Yeah, one thing you can't trust right now is Amazon's projected delivery dates, because I ordered something that is supposed to be here May 11th, and it's already at the post office waiting for me to pick it up. So it's not very accurate right now.
Rather than say it's going to be out that later and it's show up earlier, though.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I think that's the safety net that they've created. Yeah. Is they've just said, everything's going to take 2 months to get there, and realistically it doesn't. Mm-hmm. It just stops people from ordering stuff willy-nilly.
And it also shows that they are they're not sure about how the postal delivery is going to work.
True.
So they're playing it safe.
Yeah. We're not sure about the postal system on the best of days.
I bet I come twice a week.
In Denmark, the postal is once a week.
U.S. Postal is almost done.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're just wrapping up coffee break for today, and I'm already looking forward to tomorrow's. It's hard to believe tomorrow's Friday, and then I'm going to be at the studio trying to get things ready because Wednesday I'm on the air, so I can't wait.
Yeah. So
hope you'll be able to join me for coffee break, and of course plan to be watching on Wednesday night as well as Category 5 relaunches from the new studio.
Yay.
Have a great afternoon, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Take care.
See you later. Bye.
Bye now.